so much stuff. And so thankful for Jesus. So thankful for what he does and is doing. Pulled this out. I'm going to share this because I don't know if I've showed you this. I don't even really know who bought me this, so thank you. this is what I marked my Bible with. So they apparently did. She's giving me the I hate you look. I pull this out every time I open this thing. This is what I mark my page with. And the first thing that I see every time I talk to you guys is this. Redeemed. I don't know if you can see it in the back. But, man, it's awesome, isn't it? Open up this book and get ready to speak words of life to us from Jesus. And the first thing I see is redeemed. And man, I almost point that out every week. Just to be completely honest, I was like, hey, we'll go for it tonight since we're singing every song. But man, it's so kind of overcome tonight. I've been thinking about this since this morning, and I hope it doesn't sound crazy. It's kind of on the topic of redeeming, and I guess that's why I'm crazy inside. I was getting up this morning and just kind of going through my get ready in the morning thing. I just thought about this in the shower this morning. The gravity of God is greater than the depravity of man. See, I love that because I am a sinner. I am fallen by nature. That's what I am. Thank you, Adam, and thank you, Lee. I'm a sinner. And the gravity of God, the majesty of God, and the magnitude of God, the pull of God is greater than my sin. And that's what I've been carrying around all day. I don't know why I've been carrying that around all day, but I've been carrying that around all day. And I almost texted to John this morning, and I was like, I've got to go to work. So I didn't. And man, I've been thinking about that. So I just wanted to share that tonight. Because I feel like somebody, I've probably been carrying that for somebody tonight. That no matter where you are on this walk, no matter where you are, man, if you've never met Jesus or you've never heard about Jesus or you have heard about Jesus and you just know, man, I'm saved, but I'm a sinner. I just want you to know that tonight, that the majesty of God, the magnitude of God, the gravity of God, man, it wipes your sin out. There's no match for that. And there's nothing you can do to escape the pull of God tonight. There's nothing you can do to get out of that flow tonight. Because God's gravity is greater than our sin. He's pulling us to Him. And I've been thinking about that all day. And man, it's been a good day because of that, I believe. And tonight we're going to be finishing up a series, Jesus, the Point of It All. And if you've not been here, it's pretty much summed up in the name, so I don't have to give you some great theological explanation of what's going on tonight. It's that Jesus is the point. That's the point of this whole past couple weeks. We're actually, I don't know if anybody except for Tina knows this, but we're going to paint that right there on the back wall or on the top. Jesus is the point. Nice. Because that's our deal around here. We said it the first Sunday we ever walked into this place, man, Jesus is the foundation. Jesus is the cornerstone. And I put it out the other day, and I was like, hey, what should we put on the back wall? And she texted me back the next day, and she's like, I think we should put Jesus as the point. And I was like, man, that's exactly why. Why didn't I think of that? That's exactly what it's doing. That's the truth tonight. If you don't get anything else that I say tonight, you shut me off right now. The name is enough. Jesus, the point of it all. See, the whole series is based around this idea that Jesus is the point of everything. There's this question that's been around probably for thousands of years. What is the meaning of life? Because man has been looking for the meaning of life since probably the garden, just to be honest. You see, we were created for a relationship with God. You see that in Genesis 1 through 3. God made man so that God could share himself with us. We were made, we were formed, we were fashioned to have a relationship with God. And sin came in, and sin disrupted that, and it busted the walls right off of that plan. And all of this whole story is Jesus and God making a way for us to get back and to have that relationship again. And see, the problem is, ever since Genesis 3, man has been looking for something to fill that void. We were created for a relationship with God, and that was separated from us, that was taken from us by our sin. So we've been trying to shove other things in that spot ever since the garden. Ever since Genesis 3, Adam and Eve started with an apple. And we kind of went on from there and into pride and into sin and into pleasure and into all these other different avenues. We've lusted after money. We've lusted after people. We went after other things to try to fill a hole in us that was made for God. And the point of this whole thing is, what is the meaning of life? Well, Jesus is the meaning of life. What is the point of life? Jesus is the point of life. Why are you breathing right now? The answer is Jesus. It's summed up in the book of Acts like this: so that we may reach out in the dark and find God. So that we may find God and find a relationship with God. That's what we're here for. That's what we're in this place for. See, the total sum of my life, the reason I was created and put here, was not so that I could wake up every morning and go to work. It wasn't so I could have the most money on the planet. It wasn't so I could aspire to be Bill Gates. It wasn't so I could heap up pleasure for myself or things for myself. It was so that I could have a relationship with God, because Jesus is the point. In the past couple weeks, we've been just diving into that and looking at what that looks like. And we started 3 weeks ago in Matthew chapter 6. It's this deal called the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is talking, and he talks from like chapter 5 all the way to the end of chapter 7. And it's just this one long sermon. You think God talked for a long time? Well, Jesus did just 3 chapters. And they were sitting there for that, and that was okay with them. See, all these people had amassed to come and to hear the words of Jesus. And they walked up on this mountain, and Jesus sat down, and all these people sat down around, and Jesus just started talking about different things. It started with the Beatitudes: blessed are the whoever's, for they will do whatever. And it's the Beatitudes, if you want to look it up, it's right there in 5. And then Jesus started talking about these other topics, about prayer. He talked a little bit about adultery. He talked a little bit about murder. And right here in the middle of the sermon, he kind of breaks away from all that for a second. And he looks at these people down below him on this mountain, and he kind of casts some perspective into their life. He says, man, don't heap up for yourselves treasures here on earth, where moth and rust may destroy, where the thief may break in and steal. Jesus looks at these people, and basically what he says is, don't waste your life chasing after temporary things. Don't waste your life chasing after earthly things. Don't waste your life chasing and looking for things down here that aren't going to mean anything at the end of the day, because if they don't break, you are going to, and then you're not going to be able to take any of this stuff with you. And he looks right back at him and he says, but instead, why don't you lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where there are no moths to destroy and there is no rust to decay and thieves aren't going to break in and steal. Why don't you set your eyes on that up there instead of stuff down here? Perspective. Jesus wasn't looking at these people and saying, hey, you can't have stuff. You can't have a couch, so live outside. You can't have cushions, so you better sleep in the dirt. He wasn't looking at them and saying any of that stuff. He was just saying, hey, you guys need to wake up a little bit. You live your life chasing after money and stuff and pleasure, and there's something bigger. There's a bigger picture. There's a bigger story. And Jesus said, I'm inviting you. Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing that Jesus invites you into his story so that what you're created for is no longer, I got to wake up and go to work today, but you're created for now, oh, I can be in Jesus' story and I can have a relationship with God. That's amazing. And he looks right at these people and he says this, and this is pretty earth-shattering, just to be honest. He says, because where your treasure is, there your heart is also. Now, if we ask this question, and I mean, what's your treasure? Probably everybody in the building, because we've been in church for at least 15 minutes now, is, hey, Jesus. Jesus is the meaning. Jesus is the reason. Jesus is my treasure. And then the follow-up question to that would be, then what are you chasing? What are you pursuing? Well, what's getting you through your day? What are you thinking about right now? What are you chasing after? Because if it's not Jesus, then your treasure is not Jesus. It's an amazing idea, really, to think about Jesus as your treasure. I think the first person I ever heard talk about it like that was John Piper. He said, is Jesus your treasure? He asked that. I had no idea what he meant. And what he's asking is, man, what's your heart pursuing? And Jesus keeps going in chapter 6, and he starts talking about all these different things that we waste our lives pursuing, and it's kind of crazy. The first thing he picks out is our life. He says, don't worry about your life. Don't worry about food. Don't worry about what you're going to drink. Don't worry about your clothing. He picks these necessities or things that we think are necessities. He didn't say, don't worry about your 2014 Ford Mustang. He didn't say that. That would make sense to me. He didn't say, don't worry if you're going to sleep inside. Don't worry if you're going to be outside in the cold or inside in the heat. He didn't say any of that stuff because, just to be honest, all of that is luxury. You can get us on, let's not chase luxury. But Jesus looks at these people and he says, don't even chase after your life. Don't even chase after what you're going to eat and what you're going to drink, because after all, isn't life more than food? And isn't the body more than clothing? And then he follows it up and says this. He said, but seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and he'll take care of all these other things. Jesus looks at these people that are used to working for what they have, working to live, working to eat, working to have clothing, these people that are used to working for the necessities, just to be honest. He looks at these people and he says, hey, don't worry about any of that, but actually, I want you to wake up every morning and I want you to look for the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And God will take care of everything else. He looks at these people on this mountain and he says, hey, you're missing it, guys. You're missing it because you think that life is about fishing, and you think that life is about food on the table, and you think that life is about providing. But see, God is the provider, and if you'll just chase after the provider, he will do what he does. He will provide. And then last week, we saw that, again, I think Matthew, I'm just going to take a guess at it. We started talking about John the Baptist. I love John the Baptist. We talked about this last week because John, out of all the people in the whole Bible, gets it. He understands what life is about. Last week we saw that he was out in the wilderness preaching. That's a weird place to preach, by the way. If you're going to take up preaching, you probably want to go somewhere that people are, not in a desolate place. And this is where John is. And John's preaching out here in the wilderness to sticks and rocks and birds and whatever else is out there. And one day, people start showing up. And not one or two people or five people, but like flocks of herds of people start showing up in the wilderness to hear this message: repent. The kingdom of heaven is coming. John is a successful preacher. He has all kinds of people coming to him. And by our standards, he would be like the mega church today. There's people all over the hill waiting to hear this guy preach, and then he's baptizing people every single day, dunking people under the water every single day. Crazy, crazy ministry. Like, you could only dream of having a ministry like John the Baptist. And inside of this ministry, he says something one day. He looks at these people, and he looks at these Pharisees and Sadducees, and he looks at his disciples and he says, hey, I'm not the Messiah. I've actually just come to prepare the way for the Messiah. I've just come to roll out the red carpet. I've just come to clear away all the debris and all the obstacles so that when the Messiah gets here, he can do what he's come to do. And I've just come to make the way. Actually, he's so much better than me that I can't even unbuckle his shoes. So I know everybody's here for me right now, but I'm just here for Jesus. And he uses his whole life and his whole ministry and his whole platform just to point up and say, hey, it's not about me, it's about him. And tonight, that's kind of the launching pad that we're going to fly off of, because we're going to be in John chapter 3, not John the Baptist chapter 3, but John the other guy chapter 3. And we're going to be looking at a story just about a few days after this baptism. See, in the book of John, which is a different book than we were in last week, we see that Jesus is baptized right there at the end of chapter 1 that John makes this proclamation, hey, I'm not the Messiah. I can't even untie his shoes, actually. And then Jesus shows up and Jesus says, hey, John, I want you to baptize me. Now, that would be a pretty awesome story. I'm just going to let you know, hey, I'm the guy that baptized Jesus. Like, that's amazing, right? This is John. And this all happens in the book of John. And then we see that Jesus starts his earthly ministry right after he's baptized. He goes to this wedding and he turns water into wine. You've heard about that. He drives money changers out of the temple. There were these people in the house of God that were under the disguise of working for God, taking things and stealing things from the people of God. And then Jesus goes in and he drives all these people out of the house of God. He's like, hey, thieves and hypocrites, get out of here because you're not who you say you are. You're not working for God like you say you are. Jesus drives them out. And then at the beginning of chapter 3, we see this conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus. Nicodemus is a Pharisee. One day, I just hope that I work up enough courage to teach this story. I'll just be completely honest. I've almost taught this like 47 times since we've started doing Overflow, and I just cannot get the courage up to do it because it's so amazing. And then some of the most famous verses in the New Testament happen right here in John chapter 3. If you already know what I'm talking about, don't you? We can quote it together right now. Don't do it. But John 3:16 happens. And right after that is the story that we're stepping into tonight. Days after probably the ministry of Jesus and the baptism of Jesus comes John chapter 3, verse 22. It says, after this being the conversation between Nicodemus and Jesus, after this, Jesus and his disciples went to the Judean countryside. Jesus had been wandering around Jerusalem. We just see him clean out the temple of all these people. He had a conversation with a Pharisee, and now he's leaving Jerusalem, and he's going out into the wilderness. He's going out into the place that John had just baptized him. He's going out into the place where John has been preaching away, really, from the people. And it says, him and the disciples went to the Judean countryside, where he spent time with them and baptized. So Jesus gets the disciples and some other people, I guess, and he goes out into the wilderness, and Jesus spends time with these guys there. I think this is really important. It's amazing to me that although Jesus was on the way to the cross, Jesus is 30 years old here and just started his ministry, he has time for these guys, to pour into these guys, to love these guys, to show them who he is, and to make sure that he builds a relationship with these guys. And I think a lot of times we always think, man, Jesus is a busy guy. Jesus doesn't have time to listen to me. Jesus doesn't have time to hear me. Jesus doesn't have time to spend with me. Jesus has time to spend with us. I love that, because just to be honest, when there's a time problem going on, it's our time problem. It's not Jesus' time problem. Man, I don't know if Jesus wants to hear this prayer. Well, why don't you just pray it and see? Because I bet he does. I don't know if Jesus wants me to feel him tonight. Well, why don't you just reach out and touch and see if he does? Because I guarantee you, if you have time for Jesus, Jesus has time for you. And he takes these guys out in the wilderness and he spends time with them. And while they're there, Jesus is baptizing. It doesn't say who he's baptizing. He's probably baptizing some disciples. He's probably baptizing random strangers and he's converting on the way down the road. Who knows? But Jesus is baptizing. It says in 23, John was also baptizing in Anon near Salim, because there was plenty of water there. This is a verse that I missed the first 8 bazillion times I read this, but here's the deal. Jesus is now out in the wilderness and he's baptizing. And in that same wilderness, just a little bit down the road, is this guy, John the Baptist, the guy who baptized Jesus. You get what's going on here. Jesus has been baptized days ago. He goes into Jerusalem and then he goes back into the wilderness and he takes up John's game. John's been out for who knows how long, baptized the random strangers in the wilderness that come to him and hear him preach. And Jesus gets baptized, and it's like, man, that's a great idea. Imagine seeing this if you're John or one of John's disciples. Hey, Jesus just sold our deal, man. You baptized this guy, and now he's over here baptizing other people. That's messed up. This is your deal. You come up with this plan, man. John, this is your game. This is your ministry. And here Jesus is moving in on your people. But I love what it says here. It says that John was also up the road baptizing because there was plenty of water. Did you get that with me? That it wasn't a competition. That there was plenty of water to go around. We got the whole dang Jordan River going down through here. There could have been 18 people out there by the river baptizing people, and it would have been okay because John wasn't hoarding up a little thimble of water like trying to dunk people in it. There was water for everybody. I think this is a big deal because in the church, for some reason, we have this battle mentality where we think it's us against them, like our church against their church, or our ministry against their ministry. And right here in the Bible, right here in this story, this verse that we've missed millions of times, there's this little reminder, there's plenty of water. There's enough water for John to be down here and Jesus to be down here. There's enough work to go around is what it's saying. There are enough people, there are enough people to baptize, there are enough lost people to come, there are enough people that need to hear, that Jesus and John can work side by side. It's not a competition. Now, I've been in churches like that, and I've heard preachers make comments like that. Man, we don't want them coming down here. That may take some of our people. You ever heard that? We can't do events together because if we do events together and they like them better, they'll just leave us, and then we won't have as many people. And what we've turned church into, it's a scary thing, is we just steal saved people from other churches. That's our ministries. Do you know that? We that's what we do. We just have this big, like, piggy bank full of Christians, and we try to steal other people's Christians and put them in our piggy bank. That's what we do. So we're worried and we're protective and we're hoarding up all our people and we're like, don't you talk to them, preacher. You got to go down there. Don't you invite somebody to your church from our church because we're going to be mad. And we've turned it into this competition. And what we forget is there's plenty of water. We don't have to fight over the same 17 Christians in Knoxville because guess what? There's like a couple thousand lost people. And if every church in Knoxville would just take care of their side of the river, if every church in Knoxville would just baptize the people around them, would just do the work around them, there would be plenty of water. We could plant 1,000 churches in Knoxville today, and there would still be lost people tomorrow. We could plant 1,000 churches in Knoxville today, and 6 weeks from now, 6 months from now, 6 years from now, there would still be lost people, and there would still be work because there's plenty of water. And then I saw that, and I was like, man, what are we doing? See, we've missed the point because we've made it about our ministries instead of about Jesus. We've made it about our ministries and keeping our people instead of about the work of the kingdom. And because of that, we are missing boatloads of lost people because we'd rather just steal Christians. And the Bible, right here in John chapter 3, what an amazing chapter, says, hey guys, look up, there's plenty of water. Jesus, you baptize down there, and I'll baptize down here. The overflow, you baptize right here, and then North Acres will baptize over there, and Randall will baptize over there, and Buffett Heights will baptize over there. And if you put a church right next door, you just take care of that side of the road, and we'll get this one. We're not competing. There's plenty of water. You see, when we make it about ministries, we're missing the point. This is in 24. Oh, sorry, I'm assuming 23. I got carried away. So there was plenty of water, and it says people were coming and being baptized. People were coming to John and being baptized. Jesus, right down the road, the Messiah, right down the road, yet people are still coming to John. Why? Because John had not yet been thrown in prison. Because John was still there. And because John was still there and John was still available, John was still useful. See, really, that's what God asked for us, is that we'll just show up and we'll be available. And if we'll do those two things, God will use you. You're like, how can God use me? Well, God can use you in a million different ways. Because it's not about the ministry, it's just about Jesus. And as long as you're around, and as long as you want to be around, God will use you, and He'll put you where He wants you to be. It says in 25, then a dispute arose between John's disciples and a Jew about purification. So John's baptizing people. Some Jewish guy walks up and apparently he don't like the deal. He's not like all for John. This is kind of weird for John probably because for however long he's been baptizing people, people have just been coming and they've been like, all right, that's awesome. Let's dunk me in this water right here. Thank you, John. And now this one day, this Jewish guy walks up and there's some theological argument that goes on. He just cannot get past. And as John's disciples and this guy have it out, they quickly realize, I guess, that this man's not going to convert. He's not going to do this deal. Then it says in 26, so they came to John and told him. Told him what? Obviously it should be, hey man, there's a scholar here you need to talk to because he doesn't understand what we're talking about, and maybe we're not like you, John, so maybe we're just not good explainers, but that's not what they do. It says that they go to John and they tell him, Rabbi, teacher, the one you testified about and who was with you across the Jordan is baptizing, and everyone is flocking to him. What? A dispute arose between the disciples of John and a Jewish man about purification. And the disciples go back to John and they say, hey, you remember that Jesus guy? This is not connected at all. Like, it's a Jewish guy. It's not one of Jesus' friends that have walked down the road and been like, hey, John, Jesus is down there. He's better than you. But somehow these disciples of John have twisted it around and changed it into an argument about Jesus. And they go up to him, and it starts off pretty good. They're like, hey, teacher, I just want to remind you, you remember that guy that you baptized, that you were like, oh, this is the Messiah. You remember that guy, the one you're pointing at him, and you were like, I can't untie his shoes. Well, now he's down the road baptizing people. What are you going to do about it? This had nothing to do with this Jewish man. But for some reason, John apparently is perceived to have lost some clout here. John has started to lose in these disciples' eyes some of his popularity, some of his attraction because Jesus had showed up. And they're blaming something that Jesus had nothing to do with on Jesus because there's jealousy there. They're looking down the road and they can see the crowds not walking towards John so much anymore. Remember, John is still baptizing people. The crowds may have thinned out a little bit, but John is still having an effective ministry here. But for some reason, these guys have decided, man, it's not enough. This Jesus guy, the people are flocking to him now. We used to have 1,000. Now we got 700, and there's a problem here, John. What are you going to do about that Jesus guy? See, jealousy grows up in them. Fear, I guess, that they would lose some of that status rose up in them, because here's the deal. If John loses his ministry, the disciples of John are pretty much nobodies now. They're used to every day people coming and being like, all right, I'm with John, so come down here and I'll just dunk you. I can do it. My name's Chris and I'm with John. And come on, remember me, I'm Chris. Like, they're used to that popularity by way of John. And now Jesus is down the road and they're afraid they're going to lose some of that. They're afraid that these people are going to walk away and they become jealous. And here's what happens. They make it less about what's being done and more about who's doing it. They make it less about the work of God and more about the work of John. They somehow in this forget, man, if God wasn't in this, if God wasn't doing this, John is still a nobody. If God hadn't said way before, you know, like John was ever born in the book of Isaiah, that there was going to be this guy, if God hadn't determined it was going to be this man we call John the Baptist, John would have had no ministry. And now they've forgotten all that and forgotten about God and they've forgotten about actually what's being done, and they've decided, hey, it's about us. When we get jealous over our ministry, or we get jealous over our position, or we get jealous over really anything, we make it less about God and more about us. When we're so afraid somebody's going to come in and steal our spotlight, we forget that it's never really been our spotlight. And here's what's happening with these disciples of John. And they look down the road at this guy. John had pretty much proclaimed to be the Messiah. And they say, what are you going to do about that? This is your fault, man. We're losing people, and this is your deal. If I was John or you were John, you may be upset about this. I know this because I've been there. Let's be honest. Let's be real. I mean, this is not playtime. I've been there. Somebody walks in, and you're like scoping them out. I've been the youth guy before. I know how that goes. Somebody walks in and they have tighter skinny jeans and you're like, he's looking for my job. I've been around people that come. I used to do choir for the church, I'll be completely honest. anytime somebody come in to sing, when I was younger, my thought was, man, they're coming in to get my deal. Let's be honest. We all have those thoughts. They're coming in to take my job. And then eventually I got to where it's like, man, please take my job. But I forgot this, and I made it about me instead of about Jesus. And that's exactly what went on here. And to be honest, we can relate to this. When John looks back at these guys, this unlike us in every way, and he responded, no one can receive a single thing unless it is given to him from heaven. He looks back at these guys and he said, yep, and you know why Jesus is being so successful? You know why they're flocking to him? You know why this is going on? It's exactly what I told you. This guy is the Messiah. If this wasn't from heaven, if this wasn't from God, these people would still be right here. These people would still be standing here on the bank, but God has a different plan. And if God has a different plan, who am I to stand in the way of that plan for my name? Who am I to stand in the way of that plan for my ministry? Because what is my ministry anyway without God? John gets it every single time. I'm so jealous of this guy because I don't always get it. And John's just like so clear-headed. He's like, man, it's about Jesus. It's about Jesus. Who cares? Like, you should go down there too. Like, this is about Jesus and he's down the road. So I'm done. Closing up shop. Just walk down the road. That's John's mentality. Because John isn't worried about food, obviously. He's eating grasshoppers. And he's not worried about clothes, obviously, because he's wearing a camel hair, like itchy sweater vest thing. Like, that's John. He looks like a fool. And he's out here in the wilderness, and he's preaching to these people. And all he's got is his popularity. All he's got is his ministry. And now he's being like, who cares? Jesus is down there. Just go down there. Because it's not about John. And he gets it. And then he says this, he doubles down, he says, you yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Messiah. He's like, man, you've heard me say a million times, I'm not the Messiah. And because I'm not the Messiah, it's not about me, it's about him. I said it every single day to end my sermon. I was like, hey guys, I'm just going to let you know I'm down here in the water. You all got baptized today, but I'm not the Messiah. I'm just clearing down the trees. I'm just rolling out the carpet. I'm just preparing you guys for him. So when he gets here, you need to go down there. John says, I said it every day. You guys heard me. I don't know what your deal is. I'm not Jesus. And he said, I've just been sent ahead of him. My job was never to be the Savior. My job was never to be the Messiah. My job was always just to move obstacles. So I did it. And every time one come, man, I just kicked it out of the way. And now I've done my job. Wouldn't that be awesome? Think about, like, John. He's like, the Messiah's here, and I did my job. I didn't wait around to see if he was really coming. I didn't ignore it. Like, I cleared every obstacle. And because I moved all the obstacles, now all the people are going where I made the path. John's not unsuccessful because people stopped following John. And he gets that. See, it was never about people following John. It was always about people following Jesus. And now he's looking and he's like, thank God I did my job. Thank God I did it, and now I can rest. Because Jesus is here. I woke up every single morning and ate crickets for you guys. And now I can rest. Because Jesus is here. Maybe I can go get some cooler clothes. Because Jesus is here. John wasn't sad because his ministry was coming to an end. He was excited because the reason he had ministered had showed up on the planet. He had no reason to protect anything because God had used him in a mighty way. And I imagine it like this. Think about this. And I'm just throwing this in tonight, so however it works out. David was given the image of the temple by God. And for the last half of his life, he gathered up materials for this temple. He got the wood, and he got the stone, and he got all the gold, and he got all the silver, and all that stuff, and he just kind of piled it up. And David knew, I'm never going to see this temple. and I'm never going to get to put even one nail in one piece of wood. But he still did it. And he still did it every single day because he was preparing the way to prepare Solomon to do what God had told David to do. I don't think at the end of David's life he was like, man, I wish I'd have never done that. I wish I'd have never got any of that wood. I wish I'd have never gathered any of that gold because it's going to be about Solomon. Because David knew the temple was never about Solomon. The temple was always about God. Maybe Solomon got to get the walls put up, and maybe he got to get the pillars wrapped in gold, and maybe people wrote a little story about Solomon. But look at the story of David. The story of the next guy does not diminish the story God has written about you. We should be about preparing the next guy. Your whole life should be about preparing the next guy, because the next guy is just preparing the next guy to prepare the next guy, and you're in that. And we should know, man, it's not about me, and it's not even going to be about the next guy. And 13 guys from now, it's not going to be about that guy, because it's always been about Jesus, because Jesus is the point. And John got that. John said, man, I did my job. Man, I plowed mountains down. And Jesus has just walked right into that. We were just waiting on a day for Jesus to get 30 so Jesus could show up and be the Messiah, the Savior of the world. And John's like, I got to roll the carpet out. Now I'm going to sit back and watch the show. John says, man, I said every day, I'm not the Messiah. But I've just been sent ahead. And he kind of paints a picture for him like this. He said, he who has the bride is the groom. John looks at these guys and he's like, it's Jesus' bride. Jesus is the groom, and those people are his bride. But the groom's friend, the groom's friend who stands by and listens to him, rejoices greatly at the groom's voice. So this joy of mine is complete. John says, man, Jesus may be the groom, but I get to stand beside him on the stage. I get to watch the tears roll down his face as the bride comes to him. I get to see the joy in his heart as he collects his children. I get to be a part of that. I get to be a part of that special day. I get to stand right there beside him. And although it may be his show, it may be his deal, I have a really awesome place to watch it from. Now, I'll give you this illustration, because if you've never been the best man, you have no idea how this goes down. And I've had the joy of getting to do that. I got to marry my friend Dan and his wife, and I was the best man / preacher. That's awesome. You need to try that sometime. And I'm standing here, and Dan's right here, and Sarah comes walking down the aisle, and I'm as excited probably as he is. And she rounds the people standing up in the back. And my eyes don't go to her. My eyes go to him. Because I want to see his face as she comes around those chairs. He starts turning red and he looks at me and his tears are like starting to, you can see him down there. And I'm starting to do the same thing. My eyes are starting to swell up and I'm starting to get watery down here. And I didn't cry because I don't do that. But he's obviously emotionally moved. And I'm here in this moment, and I didn't get married that day, but I wish I had it on camera, because I enjoy his joy that much. I enjoy getting to be part of that much, and seeing, I can never, ever, ever, ever go back to that moment, but I can still remember that feeling. I was not jealous that that was his bride. I was joyful that he was joyful. That's what John's saying. He's saying, man, my joy is not in the bride. My joy is in Jesus' joy. Man, who cares about the crowds? Man, who cares about my ministry? Man, who cares about if I'm going to have a cricket in the morning to eat? Who cares about any of that stuff? Because that look on his face was worth it. Man, that joy in his eyes was worth it. Those tears welling up in him because he was so excited when they were coming down to him. Man, every single day was worth that. Every single person, my arms were tired at the end of every day. I was preaching to nobody for years. Every single one of those days was worth it because now I'm getting to watch this guy get married to his bride. And I don't regret any. He looks at these guys and he's like, man, you should be happy too, because if I'm the best man, you're obviously the groomsman, and you had a part in the same deal, and you should be where I am. You should be looking at his face with excitement. You should be realizing, man, you had a part in preparing the way for Jesus to call his people to himself, and that should blow you up. And he says this. He says, I must decrease. He must increase. This guy who's already said, man, it's not about that. It's not about my ministry. John's a humble guy already. And then he goes, you know what? Man, I'm going to get down even lower than this. Man, I gotta get all the way down as far as I can get because I want to push Jesus up as high as he can get. Man, I got to fade all the way into the background so I can push Jesus all the way into the foreground. I've got to be less every single day. It's got to be less about me every single day. It's got to be less about my wants every single day and my needs every single day. It's got to be less about me every single day because every single day it has to be more about him. You see, John gets it. Jesus is the point. Why we do everything we do, Jesus. Why do you get up every morning, Jesus? Why do you talk to people that you don't know, Jesus? Why do you make friends, Jesus? Why do you have families, Jesus? Why do you do anything that you do, Jesus? You see, you're not the point. Your happiness is not the point. Your ministry is not the point. Your usefulness is not the point. Your talents and your abilities are not the point. Your voice is not the point. Your feelings are not the point. Your pleasure is not the point. Jesus is the point. And when we get it, every morning we'll wake up and we'll say, Jesus, it's about you today. I'm going to get up and I'm going to brush my teeth, but that's not even for me. It's for you. I'm going to get up and I'm going to comb my hair, but that's not even for me. That's for you. And I'm going to go to work and that's not for me. It's for you. And I'm going to tell people every day I love them and that's not for me. It's for you because you know I don't like all of them, but it's for you. And I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to fight. I'm going to be tired, but I'm going to do it anyway because Jesus, it's for you. Because it's not about me. And it's never been about me. And I'm going to do that every single day because I trust that at the end of the day, when your bride is coming around the corner and I'm standing there with you, Jesus, I'm standing there beside you, I'm going to remember some of those people that I maybe didn't like so much, but I was nice to. I'm going to remember them when I come around and I'm going to see the joy in your eyes that they're there. I'm going to see the tears welling up in your eyes, Jesus, that they're there. And it's going to be worth it to me. Because my joy, Jesus, is found in your joy. You know what makes me happy? Jesus being happy. I'll be okay as long as Jesus is happy. Because it's not about me. Jesus is the